Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
All right, just a quick reminder, starting tomorrow morning, Keyshawn, Travis, and LZ, 6 a.m. to 10, followed by the Sedano Show. Will Kane after that from noon to 3. And then Mason and Ireland, I'll join the show for Crosstalk and then go till 9 o'clock. So the NFL, Caesars has put out the win totals and put it out for all 32 teams. It's kind of interesting because NFL might be one of those few sports where everything can change overnight, 1 year to the next. I'll use the NBA, for example. NBA, we kind of know before the season even starts, okay, there's a good chance this team's going to make the playoffs. There's a good chance that, okay, these are the top three teams in the league. Could it change? Yeah, it can change. It definitely can move around a bit here and there. But here's the reality. For the NBA, it's almost – you feel really good unless there's an injury that happens. What 10 teams are going to be competing for the playoffs? What 5 teams will be competing for an NBA championship? Football, you can have a team that wins 6 games 1 year, and then the next year they're 10-6. Or a team that goes 7-9, they're 11-5 the following year. That happens in the world of football. So I'm always curious to see how some of these odds look. And of course, here in Los Angeles, these are very, very important stats, or not important stats, but they're very important because you got two teams that are representing LA, and then you have another team in the Oakland, in the now Las Vegas Raiders, where there's still a lot of Raider fans in LA. So here's the Rams win total. Rams are set at 8.5. Jess, can you do me a favor? Take a look at the standings last year in the NFL and do it just for the NFC and do one just for the AFC. I want to see if these win totals get the Rams in and get the Chargers in, because they're both, it sounds like, they're just right on the edge there. So Rams are at 8.5 wins. All right. That's what Vegas has them at as far as their win total. So if they won 9 games this upcoming season, based on last year's schedule, based on last year's standings, Jess, do they get in?
Let's see. So the Niners would still be 1, Packers would be 2, Seahawks would be 3. You know what? I think they get in because of the last extra team. That's the way they'd get in, that extra seed.
Okay, so they would basically be in the 7th spot, right? Because now there's going to be an extra playoff team.
Yep.
How about the Chargers? Chargers are at 8.5. Do they get in or no?
All right. This is in the
AFC. Ravens. By the way, while you do that, you can look up the Chargers. Seattle is predicted 9.5. Frisco is predicted 10.5. So already in the division, it's pretty much would fall in line the exact same way it fell in the NFC West. It would fall in the exact same way it did in 2019, in the 2019 season. For the Chargers, they got them at 8.5. And there's a lot of – everybody I've talked to that I've had on the show, anytime I have anybody – Russell Baxter was on Football Guru just recently. I've had Mina Kimes on, Kirk Morrison. We've talked about it. Every time I have any conversation with anybody about football, I feel like they seem more optimistic about the Chargers this upcoming year than they do about the Rams. And I know you still got the draft coming up. There's a lot of moving pieces there. Jess, would they get in, the Chargers?
So they would get in, depending on division record. They would be either the 6th seed or the new 7th seed.
So Raiders only 7 wins, by the way. That's what Caesars has them. The Caesars Sports.
Yeah, they wouldn't get in at all.
They wouldn't.
I don't even have to check that. No, they wouldn't get in.
This is going to be, if we get back to NFL, if this is what eventually happens and we are in a position where NFL is played without fans, because it looks like that's going to be the case too. I don't think we're going to have fans coming to any games, at least in 2020. that's not just my opinion. You've heard the mayor, you've heard the governor here in California, the mayor, Eric Garcetti, here in Los Angeles. You've heard them have some of these conversations that it's not likely that you're going to have fans. So if there's just a season in the NFL and you start looking at the Rams, you start looking at the Chargers, start looking at the Raiders, Vegas has Rams and Chargers just barely squeaking in to get to the postseason. And for the Raiders, they don't have them getting in. How about for the New England Patriots and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? Now, typically, I would not care at all about the New England Patriots. And if you think I don't care about the Patriots, well, you can only imagine how little I would care about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But because this will continue to be a big storyline all season long, in the offseason as well, the storyline is going to be Tom Brady, obviously a part of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Bill Belichick's going to be trying to make some type of a playoff run, and he'd be trying to do that for the first time without Tom Brady, or at least over the last 20 years. So this is where they have the Patriots. So the Patriots right now are set at 8.5 wins, and that sounds like they would just squeak into the playoffs, Jess, just the same thing we talked about in regards to the AFC. And it has the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at 9 wins, so they think they would get in the NFC. I'll say this. I don't know what's going to happen this year. This is going to be the first. It's going to be fascinating to just watch. Will Tom Brady have success without Belichick? Will Belichick have success without Tom Brady? I've always been I trust the system, the franchise, more than I do the player. It's nothing against the player. Tom Brady is Tom Brady. We know how unbelievable Tom Brady is. He's the greatest quarterback of all time. But I trust the system more than the player. If you have a franchise like the New England Patriots, there's just a system there. It's that simple. Robert Kraft, the way he kind of lets Bill Belichick do his thing, Belichick does exactly what he thinks is in the best interest of the football team. There's a lot of decisions he makes that a lot of people question, wait, how would you get rid of that guy? A lot of it is because he doesn't want to pay him. It's a system. You plug people in. Now, you can't just plug somebody to be Tom Brady, but I would have more confidence in the Patriots getting further this season than the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and it's nothing against Tom Brady, but I go back to it. It's the system. I am a firm believer in the system. So we'll see what happens NFL-wise this upcoming season. Another NFL player, by the way, tests positive. I don't know if you guys got a chance to see that. Von Miller of the Broncos tested positive for COVID-19. Yesterday was Rams center Brian Allen. So The NFL, it's been quiet with the NFL. Sean Payton, he tested positive. This was probably over a month ago, or maybe right around a month ago. That's the head coach of the Saints. But now you got two NFL players in 2 days that have tested positive. Brian Allen, by the way, did a Q&A, Fox Football Now and The Athletic, and he said that he had lost a sense of smell and taste, periodic sore throats, said he's blessed it wasn't worse. He was actually very, very positive in that interview. So if you want to look at that Q&A, you can feel free to do so. But that's where we are with the NFL, and hopefully no specific issues with players or personnel or any of that stuff, not just in any of the leagues, but anybody individually out there. But it is the climate that we're living in right now. Alyssa Tan, varsity lacrosse athlete from Saugus High School in Santa Clarita. She's coming up next. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. Thank you again, Chris, for that wonderful open there. Appreciate that. Okay, we've been doing it all week. We did it last week as well. Alyssa Tan, varsity lacrosse athlete from Saugus High School in Santa Clarita. That's our senior shout-out tonight. Just a quick reminder, by the way, you still have time to nominate a classmate or yourself. Email the station, ESPNLAMarketing@ESPN.com, with your name, school, and sport that you play, or post a short video on Instagram or Twitter, and include hashtag 710 senior shout out. Alyssa, how are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Doing good. Doing good. Give us an idea what sport you played in high school.
I'm currently a senior, and I played lacrosse for the past 2 years.
Played lacrosse for the last 2 years. Okay, so what do you enjoy most about I got some lacrosse questions too, but before I do that, what have you enjoyed most about lacrosse?
I've enjoyed learning the sport. It's been new to our school since 2 years ago. I was on the team that started. I enjoy being along with all my teammates and growing well as well.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you another question. I will say we're losing you a little bit, so see if you can find a little bit reception as I set up this next question. So I'm not the biggest. I don't know much about lacrosse, and I'm sure there's a lot of listeners that know everything about lacrosse. But tell me what position you play, and give me a little quick tutorial on lacrosse. I've seen highlights, but what position do you play, and what's your strength when you play lacrosse?
So lacrosse is basically fluffy, and you have a ball and you have a stick, and I'm an attacker, which is an offensive player. So basically we have to stay on one side field and receive the ball from our defensive players or our midfielders. And basically our job is to help either score or help the midfield players score.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Okay. I think I underestimated how much I did know. No, but that's great. And I know it's funny because certain parts of the country, I know lacrosse is incredibly, incredibly popular. How is the popularity of lacrosse in Southern California?
Compared to the coast, it's definitely growing. It's not as well known. And I guess not many girls at the moment are as involved as they are in the East Coast. But from what I've seen when I started playing, it's definitely getting more recognition in Southern California and California altogether.
Okay, that's great. How are you doing in school? Actually, two answers here. Number one, how are you doing in school? And number two, what's your favorite subject?
School is definitely different because it's online. So it was definitely an adjustment at the beginning. It's a little bit easier now that we're kind of in the swing of things. And my favorite subject is probably my biology class right now.
Biology? Is that something, do you want to continue, do you have interest in making that your major when you go to college, or is biology a subject that you want to continue to study?
Yeah, it's definitely something that I need to study in college. I'm planning on majoring in biology on the pre-med track when I go to college next, this coming fall.
Okay, can I give you some advice when you're in college? All right, this is best advice that I can give. Try your best to get an internship. Try to land an internship. I can't tell you how gold internships are if you treat them the right way. And I know some colleges, most of the colleges, you know, they encourage you to get internships. But when I was in college, I got an internship at a sports radio station, and you just never know, right? And so whatever industry that you're interested in, you gotta try to get an internship. Those are the best things that you could do. So that's my advice to you. Okay, make sure you get an internship.
Thank you so much.
Now I appreciate you coming on, and I think it's been great. We've been doing this now for almost 2 weeks of getting some different high school students on. So thank you for joining the show. And Alyssa Tan, varsity lacrosse athlete from Saugus High School in Santa Clarita. Alyssa, good luck with everything, and hopefully when you do get to college, you'll have as much success there as you're having in high school, all right?
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
All right. You're welcome, Alyssa. She's breaking up a little bit, guys. I couldn't go anymore. I was trying there. I was trying as much as I can to keep that conversation going. Did you guys get it too? It was breaking up? Was that just me?
That was just a little bit. Just a little bit.
All right. She was solid on there. It's funny because I asked her, "Are you guys lacrosse fans at all, or not at all?"
I've heard of lacrosse.
An answer.
I've seen lacrosse on many movies, but that's about it for me.
You see highlights, right? Like there's mm-hmm. the East Coast. She said it's popular in the East Coast, so it's not like okay, this is unheard of or anything like that. But when I asked her to explain it, man, that was phenomenal. She was explaining to me like I was a kid that had never seen lacrosse in my life. I don't blame her for doing that, by the way. But what movie was it?
American Pie.
American Pie. That's right.
I already knew him.
Stifler.
Yeah.
Stifler and his lacrosse team. Stifler.
That's where my mind first went.
Okay, we have We have actually. Should I do this right now? Jess, what time are we doing halftime at? Because I got these. I got these Jordan highlights on Good Morning America that I wanted to play. Should I do that later? Or should I do that right now?
We'll do that a little later. We'll break right now and start halftime a little early, and we'll get MJ after halftime.
Okay, so Michael Jordan was on Good Morning America, and I thought he had – and this is going to be the theme, by the way, for the next couple of weeks. This isn't going to go away. He had definitely an interesting take on his college years to when he got to the NBA. He had an interesting take on why that was the last dance for the Chicago Bulls. So we'll do that around 8:15. But coming up next, we got halftime. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. I appreciate you guys tuning into the Sliwa Show. Jesse and Curtis in the house as well. You know, Jess, you sent me these articles. We were talking a little bit earlier, doing a little prep for the show. And you sent me one that definitely stood out. So Ethan Strauss has a book out right now. Ethan Strauss is part of The Athletic, author of The Victory Machine. And it's a basically inside look at the Golden State Warriors and their run. So here is the title of an article right now. Warriors tried to trade Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, to the Hornets for Chris Paul in 2011, report says. So I'm going to read this off. This is Ethan was on this is his new book, The Victory Machine. So he's on a podcast. And I'll read off the exact quote. The Warriors attempted to trade Steph Curry and Klay Thompson for Chris Paul in 2011. It was far from the only time Curry was shopped, but in this instance, the deal was very close to completion. Myers, who is Bob Myers, he's the general manager of the Golden State Warriors, made the offer, and Hornets GM Dell Demps was receptive. Remember, Dell Demps, we know who that is because the Lakers had to deal with him in a couple different instances. Partially with this Anthony Davis stuff. The catch was Chris Paul, who wanted out of New Orleans but had no intention of playing for the Warriors. Paul told the Warriors they could do this trade, but he wouldn't be staying when his contract was up at season's end. So basically, in this new book, Warriors tried to trade Steph Curry, Klay Thompson to the Hornets for Chris Paul in 2011. You know how sometimes you say, can you imagine if this happened? Just in general, right? Like, the domino effect that can happen. Ireland was actually doing this a few days ago. He was saying that, can you imagine if the Cleveland Cavaliers didn't come back and beat the Warriors in 2016, would LeBron James then just stay with the Cavs and keep trying to win a championship for them? If you look at this, can you imagine if Steph Curry and Klay Thompson were traded to the Hornets for Chris Paul in 2011? And that was so long ago, and Chris Paul was such an amazing player at that time, I don't think you would have looked at that trade and said, oh my gosh, this is so lopsided. Of course, today you look at it and you say, well, the Warriors weren't at one championships. You just make that assumption. I mean, that to me is shocking that this was one of the storylines today.
I feel like we get more news about botched Chris Paul trades than any other trade in any other sport in
That's
history.
Hilarious. That's hilarious right there.
But I can't. I don't see, like, wow. When I first saw that, my instant mind was that not only does that change the Warriors and the Hornets and everything, because even if that trade went down, Chris Paul would have been a free agent.
Right.
Where would he have gone? Would he have gone to the Lakers? Would he have gone to the Clippers?
That's the leverage right there. The leverage that all these players have in any trade is the leverage AD was pulling on the Pelicans. He was saying, look, you could trade me to New York if you want. I'm not going to sign with them. You could trade me to Boston if you want. I'm not going to sign with them. But, you know, it's funny when you said that about Chris Paul, about every trade that didn't happen, Chris Paul seems to be involved in them. By the way, he's also been involved with trades where he's left the Rockets. He's now with the Oklahoma City Thunder. But you know what's funny about Chris Paul? I remember the Lakers were about to play the Oklahoma City Thunder earlier this year. And you know how we do on the pregame show? We do those Ask MTs. Okay?
Yeah.
So I put out a question to ESPN LA, to the listeners on ESPN, the followers on ESPN LA. We do it on Twitter and Instagram. And the question, one of the questions was, are you still bitter about the Chris Paul trade not coming down? There have been so many storylines with the Lakers this year. I swear that question got arguably the most response out of any of them. Laker fans are still bitter about that trade.
I don't understand why. I would understand why if we never came out the other side with two championships. But, I mean, that's one of those things we just look at and you just...
Just because it was after. Remember, it was after those championships, and it was there was the bitterness of most Laker fans thinking that Chris Paul and Kobe could win. Fellas, you guys hear what's going on out here?
There it is.
Okay.
At time.
I'm just going to let it go. By the way, this is what it is. Explain to everybody that doesn't know on the air. Social trend. Hashtag solidarity at 8. Ask Americans to make some noise for healthcare workers. So I don't know what you guys have to bang anything on, but I could do whatever I can to give some solidarity at 8 for Americans to make some noise for healthcare workers. So, by the way, we have asked how many times over these last like few shows, I think it started last week, where all of a sudden 8 o'clock rolls around and I'm like, what the hell is going on outside? Like, my neighbors are always quiet, and then all of a sudden there's this banging. So that's what it is. It's a solidarity at 8. So as we do halftime and it reaches 8 o'clock, we'll make some noise as well.
And all right. Yes.
What do you got there, Jess?
So, you know the name Alex Ovechkin?
Of course. Washington Capitals.
Yes. Do you know the name Wayne Gretzky?
Heard of him. Not bad. Not a bad player.
Not a bad player. Arguably the greatest hockey player of all time.
Beautiful statue outside Staples Center.
Yeah. So Ovechkin is arguably the best hockey player in the world today. Gretzky, one of the GOATs. What do you do when you mash up both of them in a video game? Well, you don't have to wonder anymore because Gretzky and Ovechkin agree to square off in NHL 20 next Wednesday on a one-night event best-of-three series that will be streamed on the Capitals' Twitch account. Gretzky pitched the idea to the Capitals after seeing an Instagram video of Ovechkin playing video games with his son sitting on his lap. And, you know, both of these two competitors get compared to all the time because Ovechkin just needs 188 more goals to tie Gretzky's career record of 894. So while there is no hockey being played right now, it's nice to see one of the GOATs of all time and one of the GOATs today to square off at the very least, you know, a video game battle.
Let me give you guys a great example. So right now, the horse game is on ESPN. You guys see that? I don't know if you guys are watching it, have it on in the background at all. And I think it's going to be Mike Conley versus Zach LaVine, or maybe they're – maybe it's tonight. I don't know if they just went both rounds tonight. Whatever the case is, this is the horse game that's being played. Okay, I give that as an example. Let me give another example. What did the NBA 2K do? Who did they have on there? They had Patrick Beverley, Montrezl Harrell,
DeAndre Ayton,
KD Booker. Devin Booker. KD was one of the players. This is why I mentioned this. Hockey. You can't get it better than hockey just did it. Like, that is so smart. If you're going to do any of these kind of gimmicky games, if you're going to have somebody playing on NBA 2K, if you're going to have, you know, players or whatever the case is, you're going to play a horse game. I think what hockey did by bringing the best of the best to go up against each other, one of them is a, you know, obviously a legend from the past. Another one is a current legend in hockey right now. That's what will get people to say, I'm going to go watch that. I've defended these games. I've said it a number of different times. I don't mind them doing it. I think it's smart. I think it's great to try new things. I just don't think they did it right. You know, and again, I'll go back to this. If Steph Curry and Reggie Miller were playing horse, ooh, would you watch it?
I think that'd be more enticed to watch that. Okay. Although... I'd be intrigued just because, I mean, it'd just be a bunch of jump shots.
It'd be a bunch of jumpers. But I'm saying, like, these are the two, arguably two of, like, the greatest shooters. And usually in horse, it's something like that. Okay, let's not use Steph and let's not use Reggie Miller. If KD and LeBron were going to play each other on NBA 2K20, would you watch it?
Oh, I'd definitely want to watch that, because I've heard stories on LeBron's 2K game. It's basically like real life. Like he's not making
that. He runs plays.
He runs plays. He's that friend that you have that plays the game to the team. He's this kind of friend. He's the kind of guy that would play GTA, mm-hmm. rob a car, and then stop at the red light because it's a red light.
Okay, if Giannis and Anthony Davis played each other at 2K20, would you watch it?
Oh, that'd be great. I'd love to hear Giannis try to trash talk AD. That'd be so funny, because AD is like kind of very quiet into himself. At least, you know, that's how he presents himself off the court. To hear Giannis, who's very vocal, and you see that he throws off a lot of energy. Oh, that'd be great to see.
So what I feel like hockey got the best of the best in their sport to compete against each other. That's the only point I'm making. So I'm a fan of trying new things out. But when you told me today Alex Ovechkin is going to play against Wayne Gretzky, I'm like, what? They got the elite of the elite. Like, that is such a fantastic idea. I love every second of it. And I think that I'm interested. I'm much more interested in that than I was of any of these other NBA stuff. I think if the NBA, they should have tried to get the best of the best. No disrespect to Paul Pierce. No disrespect to Chauncey Billups. No disrespect to Patrick Beverley, Montrezl Harrell, all these players that, you know, we've talked about and we've kind of thrown in there. But I think they're going to get more of an audience because they went with quality than the quantity.
Oh, I agree. But I have a good one for NBA 2K. This should be their marquee matchup when the next time they do this. Draymond Green versus Charles Barkley.
Oh, that is amazing.
How great would that be?
That is amazing. I don't know if Charles Barkley, I don't know if Barkley will have ever played.
No, but
that is amazing.
Fun. I think that would be the end of it. You just see Charles Barkley just, I can't play this damn game.
Shaq and Dwight? How about Shaq and Dwight?
Oh, Shaq and Dwight would be fun.
People watch that? I think people would watch that. That's the only thing I'm saying. Like, I wish they did something
Dwight's
along
nice
those
now.
Lines. Yeah, Dwight's changed.
It'd be a little different.
Dwight's changed.
But
we need
Shaq,
prime
Shaq,
Dwight in Shaq.
Shaq will poke. Come on, big man.
Oh, big time.
Shaq,
oh, yeah,
you?
No, he definitely will. that wasn't bad right there. Okay, Curtis, what do you got? Curtis, yesterday we skipped you. Tonight, you know, here we are. I'm rambling on. I still haven't came to you. My bad, all right, Curtis? My bad. What do you got tonight?
It's fine. It's okay. I forgive you. So you may or may not have heard, so this week a lot of Americans have been getting the first wave of those stimulus packages. And I was browsing Twitter, as I often do, and
yes.
there was a joke hashtag. It was what I'm buying with my stimulus. There was some ridiculous stuff you saw on there. It was a Gucci bathrobe.
Oh, God.
A life-size cutout of Steve Carell. There was a hoodie with, like, Nicolas Cage's whole face on it. But it brought me to thinking, yeah, these are jokes.
That's what people are doing for the stimulus, with the stimulus money?
No, I don't think so. I think it was more for the meme. But it brought me to thinking,
half of them.
I'm really bad at, you know, getting inebriated and then buying stuff on Amazon and not remembering about it until later. So I ask you and Jess, what's the most ridiculous thing that you've ever owned, bought, that you shouldn't have?
Wait, I want to go back on this. So if you have some drinks, let's say hypothetically tonight,
yeah,
all right, and you're feeling really good, and you have a tendency to go on Amazon and buy stuff.
Look at random things I remember it, but then forget about it until it's at my door 2 days later. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I bought that. What am I doing with this now? Like, once, the worst thing I ever got was it was me and my buddies, and I bought a recorder because I wanted to learn to play that flute part of Mask Off with Future and Drake.
Mm-hmm.
I did get audio of it, but if you want to hear it.
Yeah, why don't you throw that on there?
It's great. It's my best.
Yeah, throw that on there. Do you have it right now?
Yeah. Here it is.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay.
Curtis, no way that's you, bro.
Yeah, it took a long time, but yeah.
Curtis, are you BSing me right now, or is that really you?
No, I actually did that.
Curtis,
I had to text my buddies yesterday to see if anyone still had the video. I was like, do you have the video? One of them came through, but yes, that was me. I'm musically inclined, but it took a long time.
Solid. Play it again. Play it one more time.
Percocet.
No wonder Mason likes Percocet. You so much.
This is amazing to me that this is actually you.
Mask off.
Bro, that's not bad at all.
Yeah,
that's
but I bought that song. Because I was with my buddies and it was like, oh, this will be funny.
Uh-huh.
And then I forgot about it and I was like, I might as well do it. But I do that a lot. So I'm asking you guys, do you have anything like that? Do you buy something or have something that you really shouldn't own, but you do have?
I got to think about that. Jess, you got something that pops into mind?
So the first thing that pops into mind right off the bat are my Pop figures. I probably have a lot more than I should. I definitely bought a lot more than I ever should. I have about maybe 4 to 5, maybe 6, like big bins full of Pops. And those are just the ones that I don't have displayed right now. Like I have right now, I'm looking at, what is that, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10. I have a good, like, just 20 out here in the living room.
Of what, Jess? What are these?
Pop figures.
Oh, they're little, like, 3-4-inch cartoonized, like, figurines of certain stuff, pop culture stuff.
Okay, yeah. So explain that to me. So what is where is this big? Is that big here or is that big in other countries?
Oh, no, that's big everywhere. I mean, I was on that hype train before it got too big as it did. Like, it's gotten so big that it's extremely oversaturized. Like, you can literally find a Pop figure on anything.
Or a knockoff.
Someone, right? Yeah, or not.
What's the allure of it? Like, I literally don't know anything about it. I'm looking them up right now. What's the allure? Like, what do you like them? Is it like a bobblehead? Like, somebody has sports bobbleheads? Is that the equivalent?
For me, that's the equivalent. Sports bobblehead. It's some bobble. I have a Thanos bobble, one that bobbles. That's like 10 inches. It's huge. I love it. So it's that lore. It's a collectible thing. It's a hobby. It's a hobby that I've got. Like, I love all of them that I have. There's some that I have that are worth more. There's some that I have that have more.
Is this popular in Japan?
Oh yeah.
Because I was gonna say, I feel like I saw a lot when I was in Japan in September. I feel like I saw a lot of those.
I don't think that company has as much. I know there's so many different iterations of it though, but you can literally find it for anything.
Yeah, I'm sure.
We need a Sliwa Pop figure. That's what we need.
Look, yeah, if there's someone out really there well. Right now who's listening and can make Pops, I will commission an Alan Sliwa Pop figurehead, and I will do it just because I know it's gonna make Mason pretty. Like, how do you get a Pop figure? So, if anyone out there listening, I will pay you to make an Alan Sliwa Pop figure. Just hit me up.
I would actually pay that person to just enjoy their lives and not do that, and just get back to what they were doing.
I mean, I've seen several random people just...
Manuel would buy a Sliwa Pop figure.
Manuel's the man.
Manuel would definitely buy it, and he would put it on his car.
You know, the only thing I could think of that when I just started getting on the radio and getting, like, some opportunities, some cracks at the mic, you know when you get super excited about something and you feel like you're going to buy every equipment possible because I don't know what you're thinking in your head, but you feel like you have to do it? I have so much equipment here that I've never used. I don't know what it's for. I don't know why I have it. I never took it back. It's past, you know, the time that you could take it back. I bought stuff like that I just never ended up using. I'm just not a technical guy. Like, I don't know anything about any of the technical stuff. You know what I mean? I'd rather have somebody come here and just set everything up. I mean, who would have known that now we're doing everything from home? Remember how I spent the first 2 weeks of us broadcasting from out here trying to get equipment and buy this and it connects to that, all that stuff? You know what I'm using right now?
Your regular
headphones. I'm using the exact same setup I did from day one because none of the other stuff worked.
Went back to basics.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's the best answer.
It actually sounds okay. Like, when I go back listen to the podcast, it doesn't sound... If it was bad, like, if the fact that we're all able to do our shows from different locations and we're using, you know, the app and the connection and all that stuff, it's not that bad. Like, that's the crazy thing is that's where we are today, you know?
Yeah, we're living in a strange time where we're just – this is how things are at the moment, definitely. But I kind of going back, I relate to Curtis's buying them and forgetting them, but – It's more for the stuff I buy on Wish. If I buy something on Wish, it takes like 2 months to get here, and I forget about it until I get it. And I'm like, oh, new pack of stickers. Oh, some zip ties that I needed. Oh, it's always a bunch of random stuff I buy. I haven't made like one big like, oh, dang. I bought a wrestling jacket. I don't regret it, but it did cost a lot of money, and I haven't worn it. So that makes me sad, but I don't regret it. I don't regret what I buy because my mom made sure.
Hey, if that's your interest, then it's all good. It's all good.
Yeah, my mom made sure. The one thing she taught me of the many things was how to manage my money. So everything was my mom. Everything besides I love you, eat your vegetables, and every other thing in Spanish was also protect your money and save your money.
Look at this.
And she always judged me. We're getting some life lessons
right now.
She would 100% judge me if I bought something that she knew I shouldn't have. So I would always remember that look or be like, my mom's going to hate that I bought this. But now
Mrs. Lopez giving out some good information there. I love it.
That's Señora Lopez to you. Okay, get it right.
That's right.
Call him a mensal.
All right, let's do this when we come back. Appreciate it, fellas. I want to play some of that Jordan stuff. So I know I mentioned it for a quick second. Plus, Meta World Peace on NBA streams was not looking to play for the Lakers in 2009. What's going on here? We'll play some of that coming up next. Also, we still got Pedro Mora coming up from The Athletic. Stay right here. This is The Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
All right, we'll go until 9 o'clock tonight. Michael Jordan was on Good Morning America. He's probably getting his rounds in, promoting The Last Dance coming up this Sunday. Another quick reminder. So that's from 6 to 8. Myself and Sedano will do a live little post hit, maybe about a half hour or so. We're going to do it for every one of these series. So every Sunday for the next 5 Sundays. I think this is – we're kind of feeling it out too. We haven't done one of these, so that would be fun to talk about. I love that era of basketball, by the way. That's one of my favorite eras of basketball. I know for a lot of Laker fans, it's interesting because the years that Jordan and the Bulls were winning their championships, you had this final stretch of Magic Johnson, and then this new era started. If you guys remember this, I'll take you guys back down memory lane. There were these posters. I remember having a poster in my room that said the next generation. It was Cedric Ceballos, Nick Van Exel, and Eddie Jones. And it was like they were on this galaxy, and it was stars all around them. This was kind of this was the perception of that Lakers team in the 90s. Bulls were dominating. Bulls won 3 championships in a row, and then Michael Jordan shocks everybody by retiring. Rockets win 2 championships in that time that Michael Jordan is in minor league baseball and kind of fulfilling a childhood dream of his. He comes back and they start winning again 96-98. That was the start of the Los Angeles Lakers, where this opportunity of who's Kobe Bryant? Who's this kid that Jerry West drafted after trading Vlade Divac? Shaquille O'Neal joins the Los Angeles Lakers. Can Shaquille O'Neal ever win a championship with the Los Angeles Lakers and be considered one of the greats out there? And that was the era for the Los Angeles Lakers. But as we go back and look, and they go through the 1998 season and Michael Jordan and Phil Jackson, and we all have a connection with Phil because he was such a big part of the Lakers winning 5 championships, it's going to be a fascinating documentary. Here's Michael Jordan on Good Morning America with Robin Roberts. What Jordan remembers from that final year?
Well, it was a trying year. We all were trying to enjoy that year, knowing that it was coming to an end. I was hoping that, the beginning of the season, it basically started when Jerry Krause told Phil that, he can go 82-0 and he would never get the chance to come back. And, you know, knowing that I was, I married myself to him, you know, obviously, and if he wasn't going to be a coach, then, you know, obviously I wasn't going to play. So Phil started off the year by saying, this is the last dance. And we played it that way, you know, so mentally it just kind of, it tugged at you throughout the course of the year, you know, but that this had to come to an end, but it also centered our focus to making sure we end it right. So, I mean, as sad as it sound at the beginning of the year, we try to rejoice and enjoy the year and finish it off the right way.
You know, I never understood this. That's Michael Jordan on Good Morning America. I never understood this. And I hope we get some more answers of why Jerry Krause, Chicago Bulls ownership, wanted to end this run for the Chicago Bulls. Like, it never made sense. If the Chicago Bulls, after Michael Jordan hit that iconic shot against the Utah Jazz, and he just kind of standing there with his follow-through with his wrist and then eventually walks off, if that was the last image, or if it wasn't the last image, the next year that team came back again, wouldn't they be the favorites to win it again? Wouldn't they be the favorites to win their fourth NBA championship in a row? I never understood, and I hope one of the things I'm hoping for in this documentary is that we get just a little bit more clarity on that. I hope we get that opportunity to see that one specific, that reason of why you would break up such an incredible dynasty. Another interesting bit that Jordan mentioned on Good Morning America. What did he learn in college? Actually, not that one. Let's do from Mike to Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan was trying to explain the big moment in college that made him who he was.
Well, up until that point, no one knew who I was. You know, I was a college kid other than the, you know, the university. But outside the university, I was just known as Mike Jordan, you know. And when I hit that shot, my whole name became Michael Jordan. And I think it resonated with a lot of people outside of UNC. So, I mean, and I just started piling on that name itself from, you know, from the successes that I endured, you know, throughout the rest of my career. It wasn't about Michael. It wasn't about Mike. It was more about Michael. Yeah.
So that's Jordan. You know, when I look back at it and I look at it, when he says that changed him from Mike to, you know, Michael Jordan, that didn't do it for me, you know, personally. Jordan became Jordan in the 90s. We all knew him as this player that was unbelievable talent, unbelievable athlete. We all know the players that were picked before him in the draft. We know Michael Jordan, but until he won his first NBA championship against the Los Angeles Lakers with Magic and Vlade Divac and Eldon Campbell and all those Sam Perkins, all those players that made up that Lakers team, I don't think we ever really knew him as the Mike until he started winning championships. Listen, we knew his athleticism. We knew how great he was. We knew those moments, the shot over Elo. Like, we knew all that stuff. But Michael Jordan didn't start becoming Michael Jordan until he started winning NBA championships. Same thing with Shaquille O'Neal. Same thing with Magic Johnson. Same thing with LeBron James. What separated all these guys and what got them to that next level, for me at least, was when they won it in the NBA, when they won it in the finals, when they won it on the biggest stage. All right, so that documentary, by the way, Andy Bernstein, if you guys know, one of the most, just one of the best photographers. He has so many iconic shots. He's going to come on tomorrow because he was a part of that whole mix. He's been taking photos of all these iconic games and even that series with the Chicago Bulls. So he's going to join the show tomorrow. So we'll get into that tomorrow. But coming up next, I want to switch gears a little bit. Pedro Mora of The Athletic. So he has an article right now, best Dodgers seasons this century, from Sheffield to Kershaw to Bellinger. Jesse did a great job of bringing Pedro on. We'll get a chance to talk about, they have this ranking here of the best Dodgers seasons this century. So there's a ranking of 20, and we'll kind of focus on the top five for him, his personal player performances for the Dodgers over the last 20 years, and also get his thoughts on what Kershaw said a couple days ago on if baseball was going to be played in Arizona, if there's going to be a lot of players that decide, yeah, that's not for me, I got my family, I'm worried about that, I'm not quarantining for 4 months. So we'll do that coming up next. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. Welcome back to the Sliwa Show. Pedro Mora from The Athletic, nice enough to join the Sliwa Show. Pedro, how are you?
I'm doing fine. Thanks for having me on. Hope you guys are doing okay over there, too.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you. I wanted to get to this article you got right now in The Athletic. So the best Dodgers seasons this century, from Sheffield to Kershaw to Bellinger. We'll start it this way. Give us a quick idea of the article, what this ranking is specifically based off of. Give listeners who haven't got a chance to read it yet, just give them a quick little rundown.
Yeah, so Andy McCullough and I, and another baseball writer at The Athletic, we were scrounging around for ideas of things to write about right now because there's not much happening in the active world of sports, so we thought we'd revisit the last couple decades of Dodgers baseball. And we host a podcast, and we thought, we should draft the best Dodgers season in recent memory, do a little competition, see who comes up with a better squad, and rank them. And I had the first pick, and I went with Adrian Beltre's 2004, which I think to a lot of Dodgers fans will be, eternally memorable. 48 home runs, 121 RBI. Soon after that, he signed away and never returned to Los Angeles. But it was, it was a hallmark season. And so there's a lot of Clayton Kershaw on there. There's a couple seasons of Gary Sheffield, and it was just a little fun reminiscing session, for people who maybe don't necessarily get a chance to do that all the time.
So give us, without getting into the top five yet, because I want to go through your top five, without getting into the top five, so you have 20 total, give us some of the ones that stand out to you that didn't crack the top five, and these are obviously best Dodgers seasons this century from some of the greats that have played for the Dodgers over the last 20 years.
Yeah, I probably should have taken more Kershaw years earlier, I think, in retrospect. He had some, he's had some tremendous seasons, obviously. We're talking about one of the best players to ever play this sport. So he's had tremendous seasons that didn't even make the top 20, and which is laughable.
Which shows you just how ridiculous he's been over, the 12, 13 years.
Exactly. So, I don't know. I don't have I went sort of more sentimental than my colleague Andy did on it. And I went with some things that maybe wouldn't win a most valuable player award in most years. Mm-hmm. It's more just most memorable in some ways I went with. So,
did I got to imagine you when you say memorable, did Manny Ramirez, did he crack that top 20?
He's in there. He's in the, I think I took him with my fourth or fifth selection, which, I put him pretty high up on my list to start with. And, I pulled the trigger fairly early just because that's a great example of one of those that doesn't necessarily count as a, that he didn't have more wins above replacement or whatever new age advanced metric you have, than Kershaw. But in terms of people who were Dodger fans in 2008, and how they might remember those years, that run. I think that's going to be, I think that for a lot of people, that might be the most, one of the few most memorable stretches of a season by a Dodger this century.
You had Cody Bellinger cracking the top five. You had him at number five, and you're referring to, obviously last season, his MVP season. What did you think? I'll kind of ask this in a two-part question. Number one, his season last year, were you surprised that he was that productive for the Dodgers? And whenever we do get baseball back, what are you expecting from Bellinger? And obviously a role now where he's sharing an outfield with Mookie Betts. But what are you expecting from Bellinger?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that I was somewhat surprised by Cody Bellinger's 2019. This is a guy who obviously broke out with a wonderful rookie season in 2017, but his 2018 was not necessarily elite. There were stretches of 2018 where he was downright awful at the plate. I mean, there was a few weeks in there where he was a strikeout machine, where opposing pitchers were taking advantage of him. So for him to rebound from that and essentially have six consecutive great months last year was remarkable, right? And he did that while stealing spaces, while being the Dodgers' fastest player, while playing, great defense and at three positions, right, center and first base. So I think, the entirety of the 155 games he put up, it was a remarkable feat. It's not what I was expecting. And to your other question, I think that going forward, I don't think I don't think it's fair to him to expect a replication of the 2019 season. But I also don't think it's fair to expect 2018, where he struggled some. I think maybe a halfway point between those two is probably more likely. But the caveat, of course, is that last year's 47 home runs are impacted too by the ball, right? And if the baseball is juiced or not juiced, that has a massive impact on how many home runs leave ballparks for Cody Bellinger and for others too. So any prediction would have to depend on knowing what kind of baseball you're expecting to see.
Sure. No, I know that has. This is the new world we live in, where we cannot just look at the schedule and say, yeah, the Dodgers are playing the Giants on this date, and then they got the Padres, and they got the Rockies. We're out of that world. We'll see when that world comes back. Matt Kemp at number four in 2011. What do you remember from that season from Matt Kemp, and just specifically what made it such a special season for him?
Yeah, that was it was remarkable because it was an MVP race down the stretch. That's what I recall about him against Ryan Braun. You know, a lot of people have remained upset for many years that Kemp did not win that trophy. That was, Kemp was just emerging then as a superstar, right? That was that remains the peak of the prime of his career, and so he's had other great stretches in his career, but never really matched that 2011 campaign. It was the culmination, I guess, of his prospect rise, and he reached the peak that season.
It, by the way, is Kemp now? Did I read this right? So is he now in the minor leagues with, or he has a minor league deal with the Miami Marlins? Is that where he is now? Technically, sort of. I know we don't have baseball.
I think that's right. That's what I remember reading. Is that the he spent last year in the minors with the Mets, and after the Dodgers traded him to Cincinnati, which did not go well for him. He was DFA'd by May or so. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's he's fighting for to keep his career alive at this point.
Eric Gagne, 2003. You have him in your top three. What stood out to you in that season? Well, I know a lot probably stood out in that season, but maybe you could describe back down memory lane a little bit.
Yeah, it's sort of, you cannot get more dominant than that, can you? I mean, he saved every single game he had a chance to save, mm-hmm. right? That was part of his historic 84-game save streak. Saved, I believe, all 55 that year. So it's that's one of those records that I think has a great chance of never being replicated. So, I think already in the comments of the article, and we've seen some criticism of steroids as Gagne's connected to them. But I'm of the belief, and with Hall of Fame voting and all that, that performance-enhancing drugs, we cannot possibly evaluate with any certainty who has used and who hasn't. And so it seems to me to be futile to try to say, well, he shouldn't count because he was connected to PEDs, whereas somebody else wasn't connected but maybe suspected. And so you just have to take the seasons at face value for what they're worth. And if you look at his 2003 and you look at a 1.1, 1.2 ERA, 55 out of 55 saves, every metric was essentially, he won the Cy Young as a closer. That, you don't see that very often. And so it was, it's kind of the peak of dominance as a reliever, I think.
Pedro Mora, The Athletic, best Dodgers season this century, from Sheffield to Kershaw to Bellinger. You can read it right now on The Athletic, joining the Sliwa Show. So I think I was a little surprised. What has been some of the feedback? Kershaw's 2015 season, that was number two. By you putting Beltre at one, were there a lot of Dodger fans, or do you think there's some Dodger fans listening right now that are a little bit surprised that Kershaw wasn't at number one?
I didn't sense much of that. I think that it's one of those things. It kind of gets to how you feel about position players versus pitchers in general, right? It's sort of the same reason that position players typically win the MVP. 155, 162 games, if you're playing every day. I mean, Beltre played, I think, almost 162 that day. If you're playing that many, it's really hard for a starting pitcher, even one as valuable as Clayton Kershaw, to match you in what you're bringing to the team. So it's not really it's not any comment on Kershaw's lack of success or anything like that, because he had an enormous amount of it and still is having it. But, Beltre's 0-4, playing every day, playing absolutely elite defense at third base, a difficult position. I don't think you can beat that. I don't think I read any critical comments of that in the comments, and Andy and I were sort of in agreement that the Beltre one was actually one of the easiest picks because it stood out. And then the rest of it, you could argue, you know, which Kershaw year to pick first, which Sheffield year to pick first, where does Matt Kemp compare to Cody Bellinger, that sort of stuff.
Pedro, did you get a chance to actually ask two questions on this? Number one, did you get a chance to hear Kershaw's comments on looking at a potential 4-month quarantined in Arizona or something along those lines? Did you get a chance to hear that's not something that he'd be okay with, especially having to be away from his family for 4 months? Did you get a chance to listen to that conversation?
I sure did, yeah. It's not surprising to me, honestly, because I think a lot of us around, you know, the world, citizens would not want to leave their families, especially those of us with young children, would not. I mean, that's a long request, right? 4+5 months. I mean, that's an enormous amount of time. It's different in, say, the NBA or something like that, where for the rest of the season, all they would necessarily be required to do is like a 2-month playoff. But baseball can't afford to do that. I mean, 4 months is going to be pushing it. It's got to be probably longer than that they would be asking players to stay away from home. And so that's one of the many reasons I don't think the Arizona plan is particularly feasible.
What do you think is feasible? And I know this is us just kind of spitballing here, but Dr. Fauci yesterday had what I thought was, you know, I think put some positive comments on having the chance to get baseball back, maybe potentially some of these other sports. A lot of that does have to do with self-quarantining. A lot of it does have to do with kind of, in a sense, creating this bubble. What do you think happens from here between owners, the league, the players' union? What do you think happens when we get a little bit more, when we can shed a little bit more light? What if those are the only options that baseball has to get a season in this year? What do you think happens then?
Good question, Alan. I think there's a couple options if Arizona or Arizona and Florida remain the only options. I think one thing that people are tending to, one error I think people are tending to make in their estimations of how this might go is that people assume that if the Arizona plan is attempted or begins, that it will finish, right? And so that's the issue with that is, let's suppose that they start a season, right? And 8 days in, let's suppose that two players on one team test positive, which, you know, as we're seeing across the country right now, is sort of an inevitability, at least in this current state. Now, if there's, you know, if there's widespread antibody tests that are successful, if testing is prevalent across the sport, then maybe it's different. But as of right now, it's not at all difficult to envision a couple players testing positive. So what happens if they start it and then that happens? Do they pause the season for 2 weeks? Do they pause it for longer? Do they call it quits altogether? So I think it's important to remember that it's totally within the realm of possibility that they would try to do this and then not be able to be successful and have to shut it down. I think, in fact, that might be the most likely outcome, depending our understanding of everything else. Now, I think that, well, first of all, I think baseball is unlikely to happen in terms of a full season or anything resembling that this year. And beyond that, I think the second most likely thing might be just waiting until like August and starting a season then, and hoping that, you know, this country can get the spread under control by then. Mm-hmm. Not that that's likely, but there are some encouraging signs so far, and baseball is going to have to keep waiting for more encouraging signs and then evaluate from there. I don't think anything concrete can't happen over the next few weeks because we're still in such an information gathering stage, right? We're still far away. The data shows from peaks in a lot of various cities across the U.S. So I think there's just a lot we don't know. And so I totally get the reason people want baseball to return. I definitely want baseball to return. I like writing about baseball. I like being at baseball games. But I just don't know. It's hard for me to proclaim right now or to guess right now that there is going to be that game this year.
Pedro, fantastic stuff, man. I appreciate your insight and appreciate you joining the show. Let's definitely connect a little bit later and as we get more information about what's going to happen with this season, and maybe you could keep us posted on all the Dodger stuff when it does come out. Pedro Mora from The Athletic. Thank you, Pedro.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on. Bye-bye.
The roller coaster continues, right? The ups and the downs. You talk to one person, you talk to another, and everybody's got their opinion and their take, but it was great to kind of actually, we've done this a lot with the Lakers. We look back and look at different seasons. We did Pau Gasol with Brian Kamenitsky, I think earlier in the week or so. And I enjoy doing that. And I know that's the first time we've done that on the Dodgers front. And Pedro Mora, as knowledgeable as it comes on the Dodgers. So great to have, great to share some time with him. So two small forwards for the Los Angeles Lakers over the last, let's say, 11, 12 years, both played for the Lakers and didn't even want to play for the Lakers. And when I reveal what small forwards there are, I think you'll be a little surprised by this. We'll do that coming up next. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. Okay, so I want to talk about a couple Los Angeles Lakers, a couple former Los Angeles Lakers. Both played the same position. Both came to the Lakers not at the same time. Actually, one came and then one left and the other replaced them. So Trevor Ariza joined the Knuckleheads podcast. That's with Darius Miles and Quentin Richardson. I'm going to read this off for you guys real quick. So he eventually came to the Los Angeles Lakers in 2008. So he was part of that Lakers team, the 2008-2009 championship. Meta was part of the 2009-2010 championship. So here's Trevor Ariza. First, I'm going to go back home to my mom. It was kind of weird. I didn't really want to play for the Lakers. I want to play for the Clippers. This is what I told the GM at the time. Ariza just thought he would never play. He never thought he'd get playing time for the Los Angeles Lakers. So that's why he didn't want to be with the Los Angeles Lakers. But isn't that funny? Sometimes you listen to, you know, some of the former players. Let's say Trevor Ariza. Let's say that played out. He didn't want to be a Los Angeles Laker. And he ended up playing for the Los Angeles Clippers. One thing he would definitely never have on his resume is an NBA championship. I actually think Ariza was such a great player for the Lakers. I know it's kind of when he first came to the Lakers, you didn't know what kind of career he was going to have for the Lakers, but he was key in that championship run in 2009 versus the Orlando Magic. And in 2008, he wasn't 100% healthy. I thought him and Bynum, if they were healthy, both of them were beat up. I think the Lakers would have had a much better chance of beating the Boston Celtics. So that's one player that didn't want to come to the Lakers. How about Meta World Peace? Meta was on NBA Stream. So that's Cassidy Hubberth, Kendrick Perkins, and Amin El Hassan. And here's Meta World Peace describing that initially he didn't want to be on the Lakers in 2009.
So it was we had a shot, and then you know my next year I had a couple options that I wanted to take, but you know teams didn't want Ron Artest, so. You know, I had to go to the Lakers. The Lakers wasn't my first option.
What was your first option?
I wanted to go to Detroit. It was my first Detroit or Indiana. And Joe Dumars is like, you know, we don't think we can have him there. I wanted to go somewhere where I can, you know, just kind of Detroit is where the big brawl happened. I felt like going there and winning a title there, that's saying something, you know. That would have been special. Then going back to Indiana, winning a title at Indiana, that would have been special. So those were like my first two choices, and then both those teams didn't want me. Understandably why, I know why, and I understand why. And then you know the Lakers came, and but you know LeBron called me that summer, asked me to join his team. I love LeBron, great guy, but I didn't want to play with any All Star. I wanted to play with underdogs, and I wanted to make a name, you know. But the Lakers was the only team that offered me that minimum, so. I had to take it.
Meta was it's kind of funny listening. Lakers weren't his first option at all, and there's a story he actually said on that broadcast, that NBA streams. He said that story about him coming into the locker room after the Lakers lost to the Boston Celtics. I'm trying to think the timeline here, that he would come and join him or something along those lines. That story wasn't real, and that there's a lot of stories like that are not real that gets in the media, but he doesn't pay too much attention to it. But think about that. Here's Meta at that stage of his career, kind of trying to get his career back. And I know that had been a few years since the malice in the palace, that brawl with the Detroit Pistons. But Trevor Ariza didn't want to come be with the Los Angeles Lakers, ends up winning an NBA championship. Meta didn't want to be a Laker, ended up winning an NBA championship. Don't players know by now, if you want to win championships, you come to the Los Angeles Lakers. Meta World Peace, I mentioned this. We're going to have a lot to talk about on the Last Dance coming up on Sunday, and then Monday we'll do the show. But one of the things that I mentioned I was so looking forward to listening to is kind of those backstories about Phil Jackson, because I do think he's one of the all-time greats. Here is Mehta on Phil Jackson's impact for him.
Well, playing for Phil was amazing. I always idolized him as a kid. You know, like when I idolized, you know, Michael Jordan and the Bulls. So playing for him, I was in my transition of therapy, lots of therapy, also transitioning into meditation. And then when I get with Phil, he embodies that, the Zen master. And I'm learning holistic approaches on therapy, really getting into it. And just having a teacher like that every single day, meditating, lights off, shoot arounds, you know, breathing exercises, blocking out the noise, things like that. You know, Sage going through the locker room. That was the biggest takeaway I have from Phil Jackson. And then even in the huddles, he was just so calm. Yeah, I got a lot of great stories about him, you know, how calm he was in the huddles.
All right, that's Mehta. Listen, I had to kind of break it down. I also, you know, I love hearing about some of these players that were with the Lakers at one point, kind of their journey of how close they were to becoming Lakers. Or they didn't become Lakers, or they ended up winning a title with the Los Angeles Lakers. I thought those were two interesting stories with Trevor Ariza and a world peace. Okay, so I want to set up tomorrow real quick. So Dan of The Athletic says there's growing optimism around the NBA that they might be able to finish this season. So what that means and what the details of that means, I'll get Sam Amick's thoughts on that. So he's obviously a great, great writer for The Athletic. We'll get his thoughts there. And then on the other side of things, Andy Bernstein, he's the official photographer of the Lakers for the NBA. That iconic, iconic shot you saw earlier this season when LeBron James is doing that dunk on the fast break. That was taken by Andy Bernstein. Bernstein has taken all these classic shots, so he'll come on as well. Don't forget Keyshawn, Travis, and LZ starting back up again at 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. And I'll look forward to doing the Sliwa show. So we'll get started at 6 o'clock with Crosstalk with Mason and Ireland. They'll probably say it's ladies' line again because that's what they do. And it's Friday night. And that's exactly what Mason and Ireland play. Appreciate you guys tuning in. Twitter at Alan Sliwa. And we'll get back at you guys tomorrow. LA, as always, have a great rest of your night.